Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, June 19th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, we rebroadcast our Juneteenth special from Black Wall Street. Stay tuned. In June 2020, I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the home of Black Wall Street, and the sites of one of the most atrocious race riots in U.S. history, the Tulsa Massacre. At the time, the city was both celebrating the Juneteenth Freedom Holiday and bracing for what was to come. Seeking re-election, Donald Trump had scheduled his first campaign rally since the COVID-19 outbreak to take place in Tulsa, which coincided with the 99th anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre, and on the very day our nation honors Black liberation, June 19th, or Juneteenth, the day that in 1865, federal troops arrived in Galveston, Texas, to enforce the emancipation of enslaved people. Now, officially, Juneteenth, National Independence Day, is a federal holiday. June 19th, 2020, came just weeks after the police murder of George Floyd, as the Black Lives Matter movement surged nationwide, especially in Tulsa. Many feared that the president's decision to hold a rally on such a significant date in a charged location could spark another race riot. Tensions rose as his supporters flocked to the cities wearing red MAGA hats. And exactly 5 years ago, KMUD News was there for the entire Juneteenth weekend. Tonight's rebroadcast honors the voices of Greenwood, Black Wall Street, and those who continue the fight for justice and freedom. This story starts in Greenwood, a historical district in Tulsa that was organized by Booker T. Washington in 1906. Washington was a leader in the Black community and even advised multiple presidents throughout his life. Greenwood was to become so prosperous that it was given the nickname Black Wall Street, a name still commonly used today. People of color had created their own businesses within the district, such as grocery stores, print shops, movie theaters, nightclubs, and churches. Greenwood was the home of booming Black professionals. Black Wall Street had achieved its own economic independence, and residents selected their own leaders and supported their own economic growth. A local poet described it as the original Wakanda, a reference to the fictional city in the Marvel movie Black Panther. For 20 years, the Greenwood District thrived, until June 1st of 1921. On that day, nearly 100 years ago, a group of white supremacists led an attack on Black Wall Street, and the day is remembered as the Tulsa Race Massacre. According to Wikipedia, it is believed to be the single worst incident of racial violence in our country's history. Members of the KKK, soldiers returning home from World War I, and other white supremacy organizations burned down the entire 35 blocks of Black Wall Street, from the ground and even the air, using private planes to drop firebombs. To make matters worse, law enforcement personnel are believed to have been on board some of those deadly flights that made fire rain from the sky. 800 Black Wall Street residents were injured, 6,000 were arrested by the Oklahoma National Guard, and an estimated 300 were killed, although the official count of casualties is unknown. For years, archaeologists have searched for mass graves to get an accurate count. Sadly, but not surprisingly, there were no convictions for any of the charges related to the violence that day. Interestingly enough, the Tulsa Race Massacre was only put into United States history books within this past year, 2020. Something else worth mentioning is that Tulsa's main industry at the time of the massacre was oil and the banking company, BOK Financial Corporation. After Greenwood was burned to the ground, the company oversaw the construction of the Tulsa Union Depot within the district less than 2 years later. the black community, however, would ultimately turn tragedy into triumph. In 1942, Greenwood was rebuilt and once again became the home to over 240 black-owned and black-operated businesses. Although the neighborhood has yet to see the same economic success as the early 20s, Greenwood is now a cultural hub where you can find educational and artistic landmarks that promote history, culture, and positive race relations, such as the Black Wall Street Art Gallery that helps paint a picture of the past.
I'm lonely, I want you only to share my dreams once more. Please come back, I miss you so.
I arrived to Tulsa on Juneteenth and made my way to Greenwood for their community celebration. Juneteenth is an extra special holiday for the Greenwood neighborhood because it is believed that some of the slaves in Galveston, Texas, that were among the last to be freed on June 19th, almost 200 years ago, had made their way to their new lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma, aka Black Wall Street. For these reasons, the community in Tulsa was particularly offended when Trump chose to book a campaign rally on Juneteenth at the site of the BOK Financial Corporation Center. Although the community celebrated Juneteenth with a socially distant barbecue and speeches, folks seemed to be preparing for the next day. During Black Wall Street's Juneteenth celebration, I got a chance to speak with some of the locals.
So I'm Berlinda Radney, and I serve in several different capacities, but one of the ones I'm most proud of and on this occasion is I'm a commissioner on the Greater Tulsa African American Affairs Commission here. And the one thing that I'd like to remind people about Greenwood and Juneteenth specifically is to remind people that this was a freedom colony. And a freedom colony was something that formerly enslaved people established for themselves for the purposes of being able to live freely and be able to govern themselves and be able to enjoy the fruits of their labors and talents. And so what I always enjoy about these moments is that we can not only commemorate the sacrifices and the sorrows and certainly the massacre that occurred on May 31st through June 1st of 1921 was a horrible tragedy, but the thing to remember is that on June the 2nd, these people got up. You know, they weren't put down. They got up and they looked around and they said, all right, we can turn some dirt and we're going to get some more bricks and we build it, and they did. And that is what it is that we're really celebrating with the spirit of Juneteenth, is that, yes, it's the day that the word finally got to Texas, but really what it is it's our liberation in the United States of America. And for that, you know, we are really thankful to be able to have these holidays. At the end of the day, we don't really care what Trump is doing on the other side of town, because this land and this area here is sanctified. And, you know, we're here to celebrate our freedom.
The thing about Tulsa is Tulsans are pretty much a peaceful people. African Americans in Tulsa, you know, if they wanted revenge, they would have gone after that long ago. They're a peaceful people. They're here to celebrate themselves. They're trying to make a difference and bring back something that was lost. And so I don't think we're concerned about violence. I think a lot of the white-owned establishments and companies are concerned about the violence that Donald Trump may bring here, but that's imported violence, not local.
Community organizers created a schedule to be on patrol all night in their neighborhood to prevent any violence or destruction that might occur as a result of the president's presence.
We as Oklahomans have an obligation to step in when communities fear they're being burnt down in our backyards, or they're going to be burnt down, to make sure that doesn't happen, which is why the vigil is twofold. One, to defend this space. Do not disrespect this area. This is sacred ground on multiple levels. We're staying out tonight. We know that folks are over at the BOK. They can have that, but we want to make sure this area is defended, not just physically, but ideologically. Because I haven't been able to breathe for years now. And to be quite honest, I've been holding my breath since George Floyd died.
The next morning, I noticed all of the local businesses within a 20-block radius of the BOK Center had boarded up their windows and buildings in case of violence. By 10 a.m., about 100 or so vendors lined the blocks closest to the venue with Donald Trump merchandise. Items included T-shirts that read, "Ladies for Trump," "Impeach This," a photo of the president giving an obscenity with his hand, and "Trump 2020, your feelings." A slightly different message than Obama's Hope T-shirts. Things were fairly calm. Only a few counter-protesters, some holding signs, were standing on various corners. Another journalist I had been working with in Tulsa caught wind that just an hour away in Oklahoma City, a Second Amendment march that had been organized by black activists was also set up to take place the same day of Trump's rally. Local media described it as a black gun rally. Organizers welcomed all to attend in solidarity to help shed light on the inequalities that the black community faces when it comes to the Second Amendment and police brutality. So a photographer with Renegade Media and myself jumped in a vehicle and drove an hour to Oklahoma City, where we went live with black gun owners and their allies who were marching from the Ralph Ellison Memorial Library to the governor's mansion.
Create a little space between yourselves when we move out. If you are unarmed, please stay in the middle of the protest or the rally. We're not protesting, we're rallying. We didn't come here to beg. We come here with some demand.
Y'all, everybody ready?
Yes, sir.
Let's go and have some fun.
Right.
As the crowd marched, they chanted Black Lives Matter and other cries for equality. Although there were around 100 men and women armed to the teeth with pistols, rifles, and shotguns, the demonstration was entirely peaceful. One of the organizers invited the press and other unarmed attendees into the center of the group, offering shelter in the event that violence was to break out, but it never did. And despite the crowd of 200 blocking traffic on Main Street for 2 hours, motorists were fairly understanding and honked in support.
Black Lives Matter!
Right, that's right, brother! Black Lives Matter!
Despite a few hundred people of color carrying guns marching to the governor's mansion, only one police officer showed up on a motorcycle. I saw him shake hands with the organizers before he left. It's also worth noting that this took place in Little Black Wall Street in Oklahoma City, an hour away from Tulsa. I got a chance to speak with two attendees, one a black man, one a white man, both heavily armed.
Well, we're just sitting here shooting the shit the American way. But it ain't about guns, it's about rights, and it's about people having the ability to be free as an individual and as a person, no matter what color. But it boils down to the fact that at this point in time, we have abusive and just law-raging police officers at this time. Not all of them, but majority of them. And what we need to understand is we ought to come in as a family and come together and treat people as humans. When you detain someone, treat them as a human, treat them as your brother, treat them as your sister, treat them with respect, and you wouldn't have these problems. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, are you happy to see that there's, you know, non-people of color here too, supporting?
Oh, yeah, my brothers. I'm ex-military. This is how we do it. The white-black connection. That's how it's been. I had no problem. I'm comfortable as hell right now. I love seeing different people representing. That's America. We're the underdogs. You're supposed to represent the underdog. If it was white that's up were getting killed, I'd be there with him. Just like he would be there with me. And that's how I look at it. That's my brother. I was raised in this country, born in this country.
Unfortunately, I forget the quote, but it's just like, you know, they came for socialists, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a socialist. They came for communists, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. But then when they came for me, no one's left to stand up and talk to me.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I second that emotion. Me and this brother are not buying the bullshit from the President Trump because we don't give a We're real Americans, and we're going to do what we have to do to protect our country and our people. That's how we do it.
Can you talk about your hat and why you chose to wear that today?
It says, make racism wrong again, because, you know, that MAGA hat, to me, means bring slavery back, black and white water fountains back, lynching back. That's what that means to me. It's a dog whistle. A dog whistles to his racist counterparts.
After the rally, I spoke with two young men to learn why they showed up to today's march.
What, to you, what does it mean to be black and armed?
I mean, normally, you know, every time somebody sees somebody black with a gun, they think we have to do something illegal, but
know what I'm saying? This is our right, just like everybody else.
Right, protect ourselves.
Being darker don't make us less. Being darker don't make us less. So as long as we free, we got the freedom to do everything that everybody else has to do.
And if people like are seeing this, what message are you trying to make clear today?
We not out here naked. We gonna protect ourselves. Because it's our right. And that's the beginning and end of it. We're born here, we're citizens of this country. You know, no matter how people feel about us, how they look at us, this is who we are. We Americans. They try to act like, oh, we're not, but we are Americans. Blood of our ancestors on this soil.
My colleague asked if police act differently when they see armed protesters.
When they're unarmed?
Oh, for sure, because they know that, you know what I'm saying, when you're unarmed, they know they have the upper hand. If they know you have a gun, they tend to be a little more, you know, standoffish.
Another reporter asked if he saw the video of George Floyd's murder.
Yeah, yeah, I saw it. Unfortunately, I try not to watch stuff like that because, you know, fuck. That's how you know that man's a devil. That's all it is to it. That man is a devil.
All over a $20 bill? That
was
20?
It was real.
It was real.
Yeah, it was real.
Exactly.
Even if it was fake, you ain't about to die for $20.
For real, $20.
If I shoot somebody for $20, I'm a bad guy. They do it, you know, it's, you know, they trying to uphold the law to hell.
He continued by asking if he thinks the police tend to criminalize those that they kill.
Yeah, every time. Every time. They shoot me right now, they're going to bring up every traffic ticket I ever had in my life. They're going to pull up pictures from when I was 15, 16. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, look at this guy. Look what he's doing. Breonna Taylor got killed in her house, and they charged her boyfriend for shooting back at the cops when he don't even know what's going on. Like, that makes no sense.
No knock warrant in plain clothes.
Which is against the Constitution. Not the Constitution. It's against the law. Like, we've already went to the Supreme Court about no knock warrants. It's against the law. Plain and simple. Breonna Taylor should still be alive right now. She died for nothing. Tyana Jefferson should still be alive right now. Like, you come inside somebody's home and you kill them. And you don't go to prison. It doesn't make any sense. If I go inside anybody's home and shoot them, no matter what they're doing, I'm going to jail. The laws have to apply for everybody. That's all it is to it.
Yeah. We're still waiting for justice for so many others, but are you feeling hopeful that there is a change?
No. No, not from the government. Or from the police. My hope is that the people arm themselves and protect themselves, because I can't wait for a cop to come protect me. You know, even if I think he will, it's still going to be 20 minutes before he gets there, and I'm dead. You know what I'm saying? Depending on where you at, I'm dead. But if you see somebody shoplifting, they're going to come right away. But if I'm saying, hey, man, somebody's trying to kill me, they're not coming. Not that soon. And they might shoot me. They might shoot me when they get there. And I'm the one that need help. So instead of waiting for them, I'm going to protect myself the best way I can.
What's the solution? A lot of people are calling for defunding the police, abolishing the police. Where do you stand on that?
I mean, defunding the police, I know people think that it's supposed to keep taking all the money from, but that's not what it is. It's taking some of the money because no police station in America deserves a tank. Like, that's a military vehicle, and it tears up our roads that we pay for, and they riding around in it acting like we insurgents. But we're citizens of this country. We're not doing anything to anybody. And they have tanks and SWAT trucks. They bring SWAT trucks for meaningless things. Like, what are you so scared of? You are the police. You're supposed to protect us, but you're scared. And how are we supposed to feel?
Do you think there are good officers out there?
I mean, I guess technically maybe, but every police department has been guilty of some type of corruption. And if those officers don't stand and say, hey, look, you're wrong, then they're bad too. Like, that's their job, to uphold the law, no matter who is breaking it. And even if it's their counterparts. And I know a lot of times they get ostracized from the rest of police, but that's a police problem. That's not my problem.
And I see your ring. Do you have a family?
Oh, I do. Yeah, and we stay.
You have children?
I do. I have one. Two.
Do you have to have a special conversation with them?
But they're babies. You know, they're one. You know, I'm going to raise them to know how to handle themselves, how to protect themselves.
What does that conversation look like?
It's like, I guess it's kind of hard to explain, but you know, like, when you go places and you see people look at you, you know, like, you can feel like what they're, you know, how they feel about you already. Like, the prejudging that they do. And I'm going to have to show my sons that. I'm going to have to let them know that even though you think that everybody's nice, everybody's, you know, they're not out for you. And of course, there are good people in this world, but you have to, you know, be on guard. Because you don't know who is who. Because I got to tell them, you know, you can't be as loud as everybody else. You got to walk through and, you know, smile when you don't want to. You got to, you know, you got to treat the police like, you know what I'm saying? Like they're supposed to be scared of you, but it's the other way around. You gotta put your hands on the steering wheel, make sure all your lights on, don't reach for anything. Even if you have nothing on, you can't even reach for the ID that they asked you for. Philando Castile was reaching for his gun permit like they asked him to. And they shot him. They killed that man after following their orders. I remember the young man at the hotel didn't have a weapon on him, young white guy, was crawling to the police. His shorts started to fall and they shot him. He had a pellet gun in the room that the hotel wanted him to have. He was killing rats with it. So he didn't have a weapon on him and they still killed him. And it's a white guy. You know, I tell people all the time, it starts with us. But you know, before too long, there'll be a whole lot of white people the same way. Especially if you don't stand up and, you know, realize that we have rights like everybody else.
Unfortunately, a lot of people have been confused about what the message Black Lives Matter means. A lot of people want to say all lives matter. So what do you say to those folks?
Man, I mean, you always see the analogy. If a house is on fire and the police, I mean, the fire department comes, the person who else is not on fire isn't like, hey, spray my house. That's not how it works. It's that whoever needs help. And we're not saying that only Black Lives Matter. You say Black Lives Matter because you want people to realize that also, just like everybody else, our life also matters. My life matters, his life matters, your life matters. But they'll see yours and his, and they'll think that it's more important than ours when that's not the case. Like, we know that everybody's lives matter. If it didn't, we wouldn't be having to say Black Lives Matter.
But you would happen to access what is that conversation like that we have to talk to our kids about. That's where the problem comes in. Nobody else has to have that conversation. Oh, when Billy gets pulled off, put your hands on the steering wheel and just, you know, like, you see Billy with a gun, you're like, oh, Billy, yo, that's a nice AR-15. Exactly. Oh, well, how many bullets is that carry? It's just a whole different story, a different feel. And that's, it don't make no sense.
Yeah, we should
all the way back
like
to
that.
The Willie Lynch theory. They try to divide and conquer us, and we still living like that. We are not slaves.
The civil rights movement happened in the 60s, and we're still, you know, we're still out here. It shouldn't be like that. By now, we should have figured it out.
After the pro-Black Lives Matter, pro-Second Amendment rally in Oklahoma City, my colleague and I jumped back in the car and headed to Tulsa. We had heard a BLM counter-protest was currently organizing in Greenwood and set to march to the BOK Center where Trump was holding his rally. Other reporters had shared intel that members of armed militias and members of the new extremist group called the Boogaloo Boys would be in the city along with thousands of the president's supporters. It sounded like a recipe for violence. As we pulled into Tulsa's inner city limits, all exits to downtown were blocked off by police while the president was landing. We managed to take a back road and park just a few blocks away from the venue. Within moments, we realized we were in the right place at the right time as hundreds of Black Lives Matter supporters were marching around the block, heading towards the BOK Center. We followed them as they chanted. After a few blocks, more and more counter-protesters joined in on the brigade. Soon, the group that appeared to be a few hundred turned into a few thousand. Oddly enough, on both sides of the street, on the sidewalk, there was a crowd of mostly white folks wearing red hats that read Make America Great Again. Meanwhile, marching straight down the middle of the road was a diverse herd of counter-protesters chanting Black Lives Matter. There were some heated exchanges as folks marched, but it all came to a head near the entrance of the rally. Although Fox News and other alt-right media groups like InfoWars reported that the rally's poor attendance was due to protesters blocking the gate, that was false. And I know because I was there. The Tulsa Police Department, assisted by National Guard officers from all over the country, including Ferguson, were blocking the counter-protesters about the length of a football field from gaining entrance to the rally. Trump supporters were behind the National Guard, the police and press in the middle, and counter-protesters on the other side. A group of young female counter-protesters had pushed the National Guard's blockade back by 12 or so feet, something that ignited anger on the other side. And a fist fight did break out about 2 feet from my own head. That's on camera too. The man wearing a MAGA hat threw the first punch and was quickly arrested. Meanwhile, the National Guard locked arms and created a physical wall, preventing the two groups from colliding again with violence. After another 30 minutes, things seemed to calm down, and protesters decided to keep marching the four-block radius of the BOK. I decided to follow them. I kept walking and came across another intense moment. Bikers in their leather outfits were listening to the Trump rally on their radios outside of the event, unable to get in. Looking back, the folks listening to the event outside were more fired up than the ones inside. The bikers were waving Confederate flags, also known as the rebel flag, which has recently became a prohibited symbol, even in NASCAR. To a lot of people, seeing someone wave a Confederate flag gives the same emotions as seeing someone waving a swastika. The crowd of bikers seemingly wanted to offend the BLM protesters and started screaming things like white power, at which point the opposite side yelled back, black power, which bikers, hypocritically enough, called racist. Organizers with Black Lives Matter have been trained to de-escalate, and a group of young women of color would always arrive to the intense situations just before I thought for sure violence would break out.
Go! Keep waving a flag for the losing side! Y'all need to keep going, he's a loser! Keep waving the flag, a loser! Keep going!
There were a lot of moments like that, and also a lot of happy moments. There were many times folks on both sides would find common ground, like this moment. Just down the block from the bikers in leather, there were other people yelling at each other, and I thought violence was about to erupt. But then, someone put on Bob Marley.
Is this love? Is this love? Is this love? Is this love that I'm feeling?
And I kid you not, everyone in a red hat and folks in Black Lives Matter t-shirts all joined, singing Bob Marley. A Trump supporter that was just yelling at a protester even passed a joint to a black man with dreads. My jaw dropped. There was actually a lot of moments like this. I heard many people explain how they were happy that they finally got a chance to hear each other out. A lot of Trump supporters said that they hated the division between groups and wished they could all find common ground. Unlike the BLM counter-protesters, Trump supporters don't see the president as a symbol of division and hate. I tried to find out why, but could never get a clear answer. By 9 p.m., the rally was ending, and I know members of the press and law enforcement were concerned this might escalate the situation on the streets. The BOK Center can hold nearly 20,000 people, and we all expected a wave of excited attendees to pour onto the streets and clash with counter-protesters. Little did we know that only a quarter of the arena was filled. Most, no offense, seemed fairly bored and ready to go to bed. Although the BOK Center can hold 20,000 people, the Tulsa Volunteer Fire Department said there was only an estimated 6,200 in attendance. Over two-thirds of the seats in the BOK Center were empty. And who's to blame? Some say TikTok and K-pop. Millennials and Korean pop stars are bragging online about how they reserved tickets to the Trump rally without any intentions of attending. Donald Trump, as usual, blamed the media, Democrats, and protesters. Either way, both sides, in fact, were winding down, and counter-protesters over megaphones told their group to head to Greenwood, aka Black Wall Street, so they can partake in a giant dance party. Much to my surprise, as I was rendezvousing with colleagues as things were winding down, a police officer jumped out of his vehicle and pointed a gun.
Back the away from the car now! Back up!
At first, I thought live rounds had been shot into the crowd of counter-protesters. Except within a few moments, you could hear a choir of sneezing, wheezing, and coughing. Then I realized the police had shot pepper balls. My first thought was how un-COVID safe that move was, considering how most of the crowd was unmasked. Lucky for me, I came prepared with PPE and a gas mask, so I didn't feel the severe effects like others did. For reasons still unknown, the police fired their pepper balls at BLM protesters who were retreating, the Trump supporters who were heading home, and the press. In fact, my colleague with Renegade Media was directly targeted and shot by the non-lethal round. They were a little shaken up, especially considering they have PTSD after their time reporting at Standing Rock. We decided to go back to Black Wall Street and check in on the celebration. Although Donald Trump tried to crash Tulsa's Juneteenth, the community is calling it a victory, as the city of Tulsa was untouched by violence and destruction. After marching in the streets, the crowd was now having a giant dance party under the Tulsa Bridge, near a giant mural that read Black Wall Street.
My name is Dr. Rico Wright. I own Black Wall Street Gallery, running for mayor. I just need y'all to know something real quick. This is significant because the fact that we are all here partying is just significant. So y'all give it up for yourselves one time. because we about to move the needle. On three, Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
I said 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 Donald Trump. Okay, peace, peace, peace.
Dr. Rico Wright, the owner of the Black Wall Street Gallery, shared a few words with me.
This is the movement. Welcome to the future, baby.
What are people celebrating?
Juneteenth. Black freedom, black liberation, emancipation. We weren't slaves. We were enslaved. There's a difference. Know the difference, baby.
This has been a special rebroadcast of KMUD News Juneteenth coverage from Tulsa, Oklahoma, originally recorded in June 2020. To see photos from our reporting or to hear the full story from Tulsa, you can visit KMUD.org. On behalf of everyone at KMUD, we wish you a meaningful and joyful Juneteenth. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.